Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday School, October 3rd, 2010.
Turning your Bibles to the third chapter of Isaiah. Last week we started reading in this prophet. This prophet is one of the most, other than the Psalms, is the most quoted book, Old Testament book, in the New Testament. It was a very much loved song, book in Jesus' day, and very familiar to the people of that time, as those quotations show. Isaiah is not so well known by Christians today, except for a few passages. And it's a long book. We won't spend a lot of time in any particular chapter, excepting those special verses. Much of it will be just a Bible reading. But to get the overall view of this gives you a better appreciation of the New Testament and the use that the New Testament writers made of Isaiah. In the first chapter, we read where God had an indictment against his people, Judah. And he called heaven and earth to witness against them. And he said that they were more dull than donkeys or bulls. They did not know who had given them their prosperity. This was written at a time of relative prosperity in Judah. So, and in the second chapter, we read of the glorious time to come when, in the latter days, referring, as he will time and again, to that far-off time. He refers to the latter days, and then he refers often to that day, which may mean the far-off day, or it may mean a coming day more immediate. And in the second chapter, after he carried on his indictment against them, listing their sins. So in the third chapter, this is a poetic description of the coming siege of Judah and Jerusalem. The prophet prophesied this about 750 B.C. And about 150 years later, about 600 B.C., this very literally came to pass. He describes it in detail here poetically. Beginning with the first verse of the third chapter of Isaiah. For behold, the Lord God of hosts is taking away from Jerusalem and from Judah the support and supply, all the support of bread and all the support of water, which is happens in the state of siege, especially in those times and in those countries, where this city was basically a castle. It was walled around, and it was armed against assault, but it was often subject to siege, the one way to conquer it. So he would take away all the bread and all the water, and the mighty man and the soldier, the judge and the prophet, the diviner and the elder, the captain of 50 and the man of rank, the counselors and the skillful magician and the expert in charms. And I will make boys their princes, and infants shall rule over them. This was his slighting description of their rulers. And in fact, when Manasseh, one of the worst kings, the last king that under which it is believed He was Hezekiah's son, under which it was believed that Isaiah was martyred. He became king at the age of 12 years. So that was literally fulfilled here. I will make boys their princes, and infants shall rule over them. And the people will oppress one another, everyone his fellow, and everyone his neighbor. The youth shall be insolent to the elder, and the despised to the honorable. For a man will take hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, "You have a cloak, you shall be our leader, and this heap of ruins shall be under your rule." In that day of siege, he will speak out, saying, "I will not be a healer. In my house there is neither bread nor cloak, and you shall not make me leader of the people. For Jerusalem has stumbled, and Judah has fallen, because of their speech and their deeds are against the Lord, defying his glorious presence. For the look on their faces bears witness against them. They proclaim their sin like Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to them, for they have brought evil on themselves. Tell the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat the fruit of their deeds." The Lord would take care of the righteous, and he did. "Woe to the wicked, it shall be ill with them, for what his hands have dealt out shall be done to him. My people, infants are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, your guides mislead you. They have swallowed up the course of your paths. The Lord has taken his place to contend. He stands to judge peoples. The Lord will enter into judgment with the elders and the princes of his people. It is you who have devoured the vineyard and spoiled the poor is in your houses. What do you mean by crushing my people, by grinding the faces of the poor, declares the Lord God of hosts? The Lord said, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with outstretched necks, glancing wantonly with their eyes, mincing as they go, tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will strike with a scab the heads of the daughter of Zion, and they will lay bare the secret parts. In that day the Lord will take away the finery of the anklets, the headbands and the crescents, the pendants and bracelets and scarves, and the headdresses and the armlets and the sashes, the perfume boxes and the amulets, the signet rings, the nose rings, the festal robes and the mantles of the cloaks and the handbags, the mirrors and the linen garments and the turbans and veils. Instead of perfume, there will be rottenness. Instead of a belt, a rope. Instead of a well-set hair, baldness. Instead of a rich robe, a skirt of sackcloth. And branding instead of beauty. Your men shall fall by the sword, your mighty men in battle, and her gates shall lament and mourn. Empty she shall sit on the ground. And seven men shall take hold of one man in that day, saying, we will eat our own bread and wear our own clothes. Only let us be called by your name to take away our reproach. That is because so many of the men were killed in battle. And this actually happened about 600 AD or a little later, a few years later, when the Babylonians came up against Judah. They destroyed all of the cities around Jerusalem, and they surrounded Jerusalem, and they literally starved them to death. This describes desperate times when, as it said, people will oppress one another, that is, in the your very own people, your allies, in fellows in battle, and everyone his fellow, and everyone his neighbor. And the youth shall be insolent to the elder, and the despised to the honorable. This happened when Jerusalem was destroyed by the Babylonians, and the survivors were taken into exile. It said here, Tell the righteous that it shall be well with them, for they shall eat the fruit of their deeds. And those who were righteous were taken into captivity. That sounded like a great evil for them, but they were the ones who in Babylon became a purified people who were able to build for the future. This is a fitting description also of the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans. And the same thing was repeated. The people became divided in their defense, and they began to fight one another's, so that the Roman general stood by in awe and said, "I do not want to be a part of such carnage." The Jews were killing each other in their factions. So this is a very graphic picture of siege. And the prophet predicted this 150 years before it came to pass. One of the characteristics of the book of Isaiah is he rapidly switches from one subject to another, from one description to another, kind of like the ads on television. Have you ever noticed how fast the ads are flipped on TV? That's somewhat the way Isaiah did here. In the first chapter, he has God's indictment of Judah. And then in the second chapter, he tells about that wonderful time to come when all nations shall come to Jerusalem, and they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up word against nation anymore. And then he returns again to indictment of Judah, telling all of their sins in detail. And then this description of the siege of Jerusalem in that day. And then once again, he comes to a very bright picture of the future. Beginning in the fourth chapter, in the second verse, "In that day the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious, and the fruit of the land shall be the pride and honor of the survivors of Israel. And he who is left in Zion and remains in Jerusalem will be called holy. Everyone who has been recorded for life in Jerusalem, when the Lord shall have washed away the filth of the daughters of Zion and cleansed the bloodstains of the Jerusalem from its midst by a spirit of judgment, by a spirit of burning, then the Lord will create over the whole site of Mount Zion and over her assemblies a cloud by day, and smoke and the shining of flaming fire by night. For over all the glory there will be a canopy. There will be a booth for the shade by day from the heat, and a refuge from the shelter of the storm and rain." Describing that far distant day when the glory of the Lord in the form of the cloud will return, as it did at the time of the Exodus. You remember the pillar of cloud and fire that led them through the wilderness. It'll be returned here, but there's a very significant statement in the second chapter, a very significant doctrine that is developed by Isaiah and by Jeremiah and Ezekiel and by Zechariah. "In that day the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious." What does he mean by the branch of the Lord? Well, turn in your Bibles to the 14th chapter of Job. Job chapter 14. And we read the seventh verse. For there is hope for a tree, if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that its shoots will not cease, though its root grow old in the earth, and its stump die in the soil. Yet the scent of water, at the scent of water it will bud, and put out branches like a young plant. But a man dies and is laid low. Man breathes his last. Where is he? Here is likening a man unto a tree. And when it is cut down, that is, when he dies, what is left? But the tree, how many of you have seen a tree like that that's cut down and one of the suckers grows up and becomes itself a tree? This became a symbol in Israel. And here is a first mention of it by Isaiah. In that day, the branch of the Lord shall be beautiful and glorious. The symbol is, by the prophets, King David was that tree. But when he died, he would have a branch, that is, a son, who would grow up to take his place. And this branch often referred to a son who would replace his father, but also to a descendant, even a distant descendant. So the branch of the Lord is the promise of that coming one. He is spoken of in many different ways in the Old Testament. He's spoken of as a prophet that the Lord would raise up. He's spoken of as the son of David. He's spoken of through many different figures in the Old Testament, but this is one that the prophets follow through and develop. And we're going to read about this more in detail when we come to the 11th chapter, where he picks up this phrase again. But here, this is what he's referring to, is to the stump of a tree that produces a sucker that grows up to become a tree, even as the stump of the old tree rots in the ground. And then we come to the 5th chapter of Isaiah. I'm reading through here pretty rapidly because that way we get the overall picture, and then we're able to go back and understand the various texts that we take from Isaiah. In the 5th chapter, there is another very significant parable by the prophet. Let me sing for my beloved, my love song concerning his vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a very fruitful hill. He dug it and cleared out its stones and planted it with choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it and hewed out a wine vat in it, and he looked for it to yield grapes, but he yielded wild grapes. And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem and men of Judah, judge between me and my vineyard. What more was there to do for my vineyard that I have not done in it? When I looked for it to yield grapes, why did it yield wild grapes? Now I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will remove its hedge, and it shall be devoured. I will break down its wall, and it shall be trampled down. I will make it a waste, and it shall not be pruned nor hoed, and briars and thorns shall grow up. I will also command the clouds that there rain no rain upon it. And then he interprets his parable. For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant planting. And he looked for justice, but behold, bloodshed. For righteousness, but behold, an outcry. The figures that Isaiah uses here are very graphic. In the first chapter, his figure was of a donkey who knows its owner, its master, and of an ox who knows his master's crib. But the people of Judah are more dull than those animals. They do not know their master, God. They do not know where his blessings, these blessings came from. And then here he pictures them, the nation, as a vineyard. And he had put a hedge around it. That is the law. And he had sent servants to tend for it. That is the prophets. And he had done everything to make it fruitful. But in Isaiah's day, as we read his description of them, it was anything but fruitful. So he would take away the hedge. That is his protection. The Babylonians would come, and they would break down the wall. They would destroy the vineyard. And that's exactly what happened. Now, let us turn to Matthew 23, I believe it is. Let me see here. Matthew 21:33, where Jesus picks up Isaiah's parable. And again, with great effect, Matthew 21:33. It's hard to find in this new Bible. Verse 33, these are the words of Jesus. Hear another parable. There was a master of a house who planted a vineyard and put a fence around it and dug a wine press in it and built a tower and leased it out to tenants and went into another country. And when the season for the fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the tenants to get his fruit. And the tenants took his servants and beat one and killed another and stoned another. And again he sent other servants, more than the first, and they did the same to them. Finally he sent his son to them, saying, "They will respect my son." But when the tenants saw the son, they said to themselves, "This is the heir. Come, let us kill him and have his inheritance." Now this was just a short time before Jesus died by crucifixion. And they took him and threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. When therefore the owner of the vineyard comes, what will he do to those tenants? And they said unto him, "He will put those wretches to a miserable death and let out the vineyard to other tenants who will give him the fruits of their seasons. Jesus said to them, "Have you never read in the scriptures?" And he quotes another Old Testament citation from the Psalms. They well understood what Jesus was getting at in that parable. They had this parable in Isaiah in the background. They were well familiar with it. And just this, Jesus was prophesying what would come to pass because of rejecting the son of the vineyard. In just about 40 years later, the Romans came and repeated the destruction of Jerusalem, just as the Babylonians did. And again, that was for their rejection of Jesus and his message. Every August, it varies at different days, but the Jews have a fast. They call it Tisha B'Av, the eighth of the month of Av, in which they mourn for the destruction of the first temple and Jerusalem, and for the destruction of the second temple and Jerusalem. Jewish tradition says that they fell on the same day, that day, the eighth of the month of Av. Scholars think that perhaps they were about as much as 20 days apart, but it's remarkable that they fell on such a close time of the year. So the Jews to this day are mourning, and every August they have a fast to mourn the destruction of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, which Isaiah here prophesied, and the destruction of Jerusalem by the Romans, which Jesus foretold in many different times and ways, this parable being only one of them. So he used the figure of the animals, the work animals, the donkey and the bull, and here he's using the figure, a very graphic figure of that they were all familiar with, of a vineyard. He built a watchtower in it for someone to stand and drive away those who would harm the vineyard and its fruits. And Jesus himself became that watchman in the tower, but they would have none of him. For the house, for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant planting. And he looked for justice, and behold, bloodshed, for righteousness, and behold, an outcry. Then he goes on, switches again to pronouncing judgment. Woe to those who join house to house, who add field to field, that is, at the expense of the poor, buying up all the property at the expense of the poor, like King Ahab did, until there is no more room, and you are made to dwell alone in the midst of the land. The Lord of hosts has sworn in my hearing, surely many houses shall be desolate, large and beautiful houses without inhabitant. For 10 acres of vineyard shall yield one bath. That would be about 8 gallons. And an omer of seed shall yield an ephah. That's about 2 quarts, as I remember. That is, the produce of their land would fail. And this is a marvelous thing to observe. Whenever the Jews have been in that land and in control of it, it has become fruitful. And when they have been out of the land, it has become desolate and unproductive. And that's more than just the efforts of the Jews. That's the blessing of God. What we saw of Israel when we were there was a most beautiful place. To look down on the Esdraelon Valley from the height of Armageddon, it's a lovely place to drive along the plain of Sharon and see the orange groves and the vineyards and the agricultural fields. It's a very lovely place. Now, we did not go into the Palestinian areas, but those who were there told us, when you go over into the Palestinian areas, it's not like this. It's not like this at all. So this is the prophets saying, when the Jews were taken into captivity, the production of the land would fail. Woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may run after strong drink, who tarry late in the evening as wine inflames them. They have lyre and harp, tambourine and flute, and wine at their feasts, but they do not regard the deeds of the Lord or see the works of his hands. People are just the same today as they were back then. Therefore, my people go into exile. Now, he prophesied this 150 years before it happened. Therefore, my people go into exile for lack of knowledge or understanding. Their honored men go hungry, and the multitude is parched with thirst. Therefore, Sheol has enlarged its appetite and opened its mouth beyond measure. And the nobility of Jerusalem and her multitude will go down, her revelers and he who exults in her. Man is humbled, and each one is brought low, and the eyes of the haughty are brought low. But the Lord of hosts is exalted in justice, and the holy God shows himself holy in righteousness. Then shall the lambs graze as in their pasture, and the nomads shall eat among the ruins of the rich. That is, the land will be in laid waste. Woe to those who draw iniquity with cords of falsehood, who draw sin as with cart ropes, who say, let him be quick, let him speed his work, that we may see it. That is, testing God. Let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw near. Let it come, that we may know it. Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Don't we see that in our own day? That evil, what used to be a moral evil, is now called a human right. And what used to be regarded as sacred is now made light of. Human nature is always the same, especially sinful human nature. Woe to those who are wise in their own eyes and shrewd in their own sight. Woe to those who are heroes at drinking wine and valiant men in mixing strong drink. Those who show how much they can chug-a-lug. Who acquit the guilty for a bribe and deprive the innocent of his right. Therefore, as the tongue of fire devours stubble, as the dry grass sinks down in flame, so their root shall be as rottenness, as their blossom go up like dust. For they have rejected the law of the Lord of hosts, and have despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Therefore the anger of the Lord was kindled against his people, and he stretched out his hand against them and struck them, and the mountains quaked, and their corpses were as refuse in the midst of the streets. For all this, his anger has not turned away, and his hand is stretched out still. He will raise a signal for the nations away, and whistle for them from the ends of the earth. And behold, quickly, speedily they come. That is the Babylonians in this case. None is weary, none stumbles, none slumbers nor sleeps. Not a wasted band is loose. Not a sandal strap is broken. Their weapons are sharp, all their bows bent. Their horses' hoofs seem like flint, and their wheels like the whirlwind. Their roaring is like a lion. Like young lions they roar. They growl and seize their prey. They carry it off, and none can rescue. They will growl over it on that day, like the growling of the sea. And if one looks to the land, behold, darkness and distress, and light is darkened by its clouds. So this brings us to the end of the first five chapters, and we'll take up chapter 6 next time, a wonderful vision that the prophet had in the midst of a very discouraging time. The more I read the Old Testament, the more I read the prophets, the more clear it becomes how God is in charge of all of the nations, and they think they are doing as they please, as Ahmadinejad has so greatly boasted, and others. But in the end, as you look back, you can see the hand of God in the affairs of nations and peoples and of individuals. And that is a very comforting thing.